So if we're in the knowledge business, we're in the conversation business. Our job here is not to show books. Our job is not to move things out of the building. Our job is not to provide electrical connections. Our job is to help people learn. We do that by having conversations. Those conversations can be between people, between groups, or within the individual. If, therefore, we are centered on knowledge, we are centered on the community.
Podcast De Bieb is Meer gaat op zoek naar de toekomst van openbare bibliotheken en hoe zij bijdragen aan de maatschappelijke uitdagingen van deze tijd. Met nieuws uit de sector, spraakmakende gasten en verrassende thema's word je meegenomen in de wereld van leesbevordering, digitaal burgerschap en participatie. De Bieb is Meer is een initiatief van Matt Gubbels die jou wil informeren en inspireren. Hij gelooft in de kracht van podcasting en het verhaal van de bibliotheek.
Welkom bij deze nieuwe aflevering in de reeks die ik samen met Irene Harmsen maak over het bezoek van bibliotheekguru David Lenkes aan Nederland. In aflevering 59 heb je al kunnen luisteren naar de podcast die we samen met David opnamen. Nu kun je luisteren naar zijn speech op 4 juni 2024 tijdens het congres bij Cultura en Zo in Nootdorp, de eerste community library in Nederland. Tijdens de speech neemt David alvast een voorschot op het interactieve vervolg op deze dag. Daarover in een volgende podcast meer. Om het interactieve gedeelte begrijpelijk over te brengen aan de mensen die er niet bij konden zijn, is hier en daar geknipt en geplakt tijdens de interactie met het publiek.
Good morning. I think I have some slides here. They're coming up, but I will do my best not to pay much attention to them. It is truly an honor to be here. I know later, I believe there's a question coming up about, are you a librarian, are you a scholar, are you an academic? And the answer is, I feel that I'm very much a storyteller. So to be in the story house makes perfect sense. And it's also been an honor to spend, I've been here for a week or so, I've got another week and a half, to just see the extraordinary work that the Netherlands, meaning the population, the people, and you have done here to take ideas and turn them into reality. So, a few things before we begin. There is a joke I like to begin with, which is in English. What do you call someone who speaks three languages? Trilingual. Two languages? Bilingual. One language? American. So, I apologize for that, and if I go too fast or if I say something completely crazy, it's not you, it's me. So please feel free to ask questions. I've been asked to, in about 40 minutes, to present 17 years of my life and work, so I'll do the best I can. So could we have the first slide, please? I'm going to begin with the end. I'm going to begin by sort of telling you where I've ended up over those 17 years. And it began with a question. And the question, phrased to me by a dean of library schools at one point, he says, I don't believe that the field of librarianship will advance if it can't define what it is without reference to a building. In other words, until we can define what a librarian is other than someone who works in a building, that's always going to be a limiting factor. There's a line in America, a lot of people say things like, we're the only profession named after a building. But it's not true. There are many professions, they just no longer have the building. For example, accountants, people who do the books, they got their name from people who worked in counting houses. And if you're familiar at all with Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol with Scrooge and Bob Marley, Scrooge ran a counting house, and Bob Marley was an accountant. Right? It's just that businesses got very tired of taking their books to someplace and then, goodness, sharing their ideas and receipts with people in different organizations. They decided to hire them within their own company. And so the counting houses went away, and there are more accountants now than ever. It's one of the futures of librarianship that we're going to have more librarians than ever before, and maybe the same number of libraries. where organizations are learning that the skills they bring of working with a community, of telling stories, of organizing materials, that they're going to find that so valuable that they're going to want librarians to be working in their organizations regardless of whether it's in something called a library. So that's where I started. And now I'm going to say where I ended up. So next click. So I started, I said, okay, what is a librarian? What makes a librarian? And they said, and where I arrived at was the first thing is our mission. What is it that we seek to do? So the mission of librarians is to improve society. That's good, like that. But how do we do it? Through facilitating knowledge creation in our communities. Now, that's a big fancy way of saying we make the world a better place by helping people learn. They might be learning about themselves, what they find meaning. They might be learning about how to invent some new gadget. They might be learning about how to allocate land in a municipality. So we're not concerned specifically with what, but we want them to be learned. Now, I've indicated knowledge here. We're going to come back to that. So I said, that's great. And I was very proud of myself when I came up with this. And I was at a conference, and I presented this in sort of ta-da. And a publisher came up and said, that's my mission. And then I talked to teachers, and they're like, but that's my mission. In fact, there are a lot of people who can claim this mission. And initially, I was a little worried. But actually, it's a good thing, because the people who can claim and share this mission, they're our natural partners. Not our only partners, but they're the ones that we can begin to work with so we can have shared ideas of bringing them in. But not enough. So how do we do this? How do we implement this mission? We do it through our means, right? Our tools. So we provide access. But this is a beautiful way of demonstrating that access isn't just to something, right? Well, we collect all the books, we collect all the materials, and now we provide access to our stuff. But what we've seen, particularly in that previous slide, is that a lot of what we're doing increasingly is providing access to each other, to communities. If I understood, if Eric translated properly, one of the things on the slide was 54% were less lonely. You don't understand, well, you probably do, how important that is. In the United States, we have something that we call deaths of despair. People dying out of despair. People dying from suicide. People dying from drug overdoses. People dying from alcoholism. And when they looked to see what group was this happening to most, they found something very surprising. They found that it was middle-aged white people like me. Now, we're not supposed to be, in the United States, dying, right? We're supposed to be the ones causing death. But by the time I'm done with this talk, I will be seeking asylum from my home state of Texas. And they began to look, and they said, oh, is it just white guys? But it turns out it was women. It turns out people of color. It turned out that when they looked at the difference, it was people who held a four-year college degree. People who did not hold that four-year college degree felt more isolated, less powerful, less connected, and they were turning to drugs and alcohol and suicide because they didn't feel like they were part of society. And so that statistic about libraries, to me, talks about a narrative that libraries save lives. What do you do? I'm a librarian. Oh, you deal with books? No. I save lives. What do you do? I work in a library. Oh, do you read a lot? No, I'm too busy saving lives. Right? Use that. It's good. So we provide access not only to materials and to places and ideas, but each other. And we give responsibility, and we note privilege, and we provide this connectivity. We also provide knowledge, and we're going to come back to that word in a moment because it doesn't mean books. When I say knowledge, I mean connecting ideas, thoughts, new ways of looking at things, training. We provide an environment for that to happen in. Right? I've visited the most brilliant libraries this past week. I've been in Locale, in Tilburg, and I've seen the poster. Right? I've been in Utrecht, I've seen the library and the Rijksmuseum. Oh my goodness, I got to go up the big stairs. It was great. What's amazing about those libraries, and more, I could talk about libraries in South Korea, I could talk about libraries in Italy, is they all look very different. But they all have the same common spirit of here is a place not only to be safe, but here's a place to express yourself, to be yourself, to offer what you have, to be of value. We provide an environment for people to come and feel valued and to demonstrate their utility and their connections. And lastly, we provide motivation. We provide the reason to be here. We have volunteers that come in, and they come in not because, well, they've got to, but because this is a place where they get to express themselves, where they get to be an artist, even though their day job is working in accounting, to be valued. And so these are the things that we do. So once again, we have our mission, we have our methods, but this is still not enough to uniquely define librarians because Google, after they did no evil, Google could say, oh yes, we're about making society, we provide all this access to knowledge. Unless, of course, you're looking at their latest experiments in AI, in which case, it's not going so well. Anyway, and they could say, well, we provide access to web documents, and we provide training, and we provide a web search engine, and we do all this other stuff. Once again, teachers can very much say this as well, publishers, so not enough yet. So we need one more thing. What are the values that we do this with? One of the things I noticed as I've been talking, and we're going to come back to this at the end, with people in the library profession in the Netherlands, is they come from all different kinds of backgrounds, from museums, from consultancies, from IT, because there's no longer the one degree to get them there. But all of them, when they came into libraries, either brought with them or very much adopted the values of librarianship. That's, to me, very important. No one, hopefully, said, ooh, I'm going to go over to a library because I'm going to make it profitable. I really, really, really want to be rich. Libraries, right? So the values that we bring, for example, we value learning. We value this as a place to explore on your own. Our schools are great, but they're like, you must know this, and you must know this, and you have this summer reading. And they come to a library to say, I just want to know about spiders. I just want to learn about history. I really want to know about Japanese manga. And all of that is okay. You pick what you're going to learn. I don't get to dictate it. We value openness, that when you're working with a librarian, when you're working in around a library, we show you our cards. Let me help you find that information. Let me provide it. We put the books out for anyone to take. We value diversity. Diversity of ideas, diversity of people, diversity of backgrounds. We know that the richest possible learning, the best learning, comes from the richest, most diverse sources. Do I have any cooks? People like cooking? Yeah. Very good. Do you like look at a recipe and make the recipe? Or do you go and look for like 20 recipes about the same thing and sort of, well, I like that one a little better. We'll try this. So we believe diversity, bringing different ideas. We believe in intellectual honesty. We believe in telling people where we got that information, how we got that information, what biases we may have. Not that we're not biased. Human beings are biased. But that we acknowledge them and we work with them and we share them. And we believe in intellectual freedom and safety. This is not a good time to ban books, he says, looking from Texas. Right? We believe that people should be able to learn about themselves, not be told what's worth learning or what's only allowed to be learned. And that's crucial to what we do. And it will become more crucial in around the globe as there are increasing efforts to control what people know. I was in Italy at one point, and they said Italy never had such great school libraries as under Mussolini and the fascists. They gave a lot of money to build great school libraries because they were wonderful ways to put propaganda to the youth. That's not what we want to be, right? We want to open up those ideas and share. And once again, save lives. We have youth, we have people dealing with all kinds of hard issues. And if they can come into a library and understand they're not alone, that their stories have value, that they can tell their story, and that people will listen, they feel more connected, they feel less desperate, we save lives. And so now we can say what a librarian is, right? A librarian is on a mission, a librarian does this with tools of access, etc., and they do it with based on their values. That's what brings us together. So that's the ending. Congratulations, thank you for coming. But now what I'd like to do is when I was doing this, Irene was very nice, and she said, you have 40 minutes. It's got to be practical and engaging. Go. Which was her way of saying, I know you're a professor. No one's impressed. Figure it out. So I could show you lots of pictures like this is what it looks like here, and this is how it does. But I have to start with something that's not necessarily immediately practical, but I'm going to show you why it's important. We have to talk about knowledge for a moment, because knowledge is an important word. Knowledge is important because ultimately, once again, libraries' mission is to help create knowledge, right? We do that in lots of different ways, and as I'm going to say, how that looks in Tilburg and how that looks in Austin, how that looks in Seoul is going to be very different, but it's all about knowledge, but we've got to begin there. Because when we talk about community librarians, we'll get back to that in a moment, when we talk about librarians in general, it has to be why we do something, not just how. Right? Because if we define a profession by how, then we become the Scriveners of the 21st century. Scriveners, you're sitting there going, that sounds Dutch because it's hard to say, but I don't know what it is. A scrivener is a copyist. It was someone who scribbled, who wrote down what you said. So when you made copies or you did logs or you told history, a scrivener was the one who documented it. We don't have them anymore because they had a skill and they had a capability and technology and everything else ran beyond them. They didn't evolve. They were so focused on the how I do something that they forgot that the why I do something was important. So we're going to start with the why. And to do that, we've got to start with knowledge. So a couple of things. The first thing is that knowledge is uniquely human. Now, we're not going to get into an argument about the dogs and dolphins. Those things on the shelves, those books and bindings and all those are the product of knowledge. They can spark knowledge, but they are not in and of themselves knowledge. I'm going to use an example. A pen. I need a volunteer. This is where it turns into a magic show. I need a volunteer. Hello. Please examine this pen. Do you know anything about pens? Oh, good. Okay. Very good. Open it up. What can you tell me about that pen? So, did you know that that's a Faber-Castell pen? Do you know that Faber-Castell is a German company that makes pens? Did you know that they have a high-end line called a Graf Faber-Castell? Did you know that, for example, this is a fine point nib? My point of all of that is that what I just said, oh, it's Faber-Castell and this pen and this whatever, that's not in the pen. When you looked at this pen, you got attributes, but history and who made it and what's the company like and what fine point and why do I have them and why does my wife get very angry when I buy more of them, right? All of that isn't in the pen. This is not knowledge. It's what we bring to it. When you look at how things are set up, when you look at books, if it's not written in a language that you speak, can it generate knowledge? Is it like a capacity, or is it a doorstop? Or is it a decoration? So knowledge is this uniquely human thing. And now, tomorrow, you may walk away and remember none of that. But you may say, I remember this idiot told me about Faber-Castell, right? How you then connect it into, you know, what you know about pens, etc. That's based on your experience and your life and what you remember. So it's going to be unique to that individual. So knowledge comes from conversation. That's a big fancy word, big claim. That conversation can be just like what we did. That conversation can be this way, where I'm talking at a group. But that's not a conversation. You're going, David, that's not a conversation. It takes two people. But if you're just sitting in your head going, I don't believe that, who are you talking to? You ever done that? In the morning, you're like, I don't think that's right. Well, who are you talking to? Unless you say it out loud because you're really trying to intimidate me, which is fine. Right? You're having most of the conversations that we have when we're learning are with ourselves. I don't know if you've ever done this. In the morning, I get up and it's like, do I want to get a cup of coffee or do I want to get the bagel at the bagel shop? And like, you're literally pacing back and forth. You're having a debate. You're talking with yourself. In education, we call it metacognition, right? If the other voices in your head you don't realize are yourself, that's a different problem. But we're having this conversation. So a conversation consists of who's in the conversation. Is it me and Eric? Is it me and this group? Because actually most of this conversation, I'm trying to prompt an internal dialogue, right? I'm trying to get you to have a conversation with yourself. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, it doesn't. Is it between groups of people? Is it between societies? There's a conversation, for example, that happened here about what a library is and what a cultural space is and what we want to do. That's a conversation the whole community was a part of, and it's still going on today, what we can do, where we can go. So conversations, who are the parties of that conversation? The next thing is what those conversations with those entities, those conversants, is they're sharing language. And language comes on a couple of levels, like what's called L0, really fancy term. But it's just basic negotiation language. Is this a pen? Yes, it's a pen. Is it black? It's black. So when you begin to have deeper conversations about the subject, for example, we're going to do this in a moment, but does anyone have a hobby that people are a little worried about? What is your hobby? You spot wolves? Now, I assume that means you spot as in you see them, not you walk up with paint. When you talk to other wolf spotters, which I imagine is things like both of them, it occurs to me there might be a group of wolf spotters, and every year they get fewer because they... When you talk about this, you use special language, right? Breeds of wolves, where the location is, what we're doing, what equipment we use, right? It's a different level of language. And so within a library, oftentimes when you walk into a library, it's very intimidating. There's even a language of space. I went into a library, we were just talking in Delft about people who may not feel comfortable coming into a library. A lot of libraries offer literacy, particularly for adult learners, right? People who can't read as adults, we offer programs. But we have to understand that we're probably the worst place to offer that because we're the place they've been avoiding their entire life because that's the reading place, right? That's a learned language, and we have to engage and learn from that level. And what we're doing with that language is we're seeking agreements. And lastly, we remember those agreements over time. And how I remember these things and how you remember these things may be very different. We've all had that situation where you've walked out of a conversation or a situation and you've asked someone else, oh, do you see how they agreed to do this? And like, they did not agree to do that. Right? So when I go to the doctor's office and my wife comes with me and we walk out and I say, boy, the doctor says I'm doing well. And my wife's like, the doctor said to lose weight. I said, yeah, but other than that, I was doing well. She goes, yeah, but lose weight, right? So we have these different agreements. We have these memories. And this is really important for librarianship because those books and those materials and that place and this facility and the things that a lot of people will define as a library, they're not knowledge. The more books you have, it doesn't make you smarter. It makes you have more money. But those books, whether they're colorful or not, they're not knowledge. They're potential. They're the kindling that can light fire. They're the things that we do gain knowledge from. And that knowledge might be the facts of the book, that might be the story of the book, but it might just be what we like. I really liked this book. I didn't think so. I've learned something about myself. The books don't talk after we leave. I've looked at the videotape. They're not having conversations afterwards. That's important. So Dave, once again, I thought you were going to be practical and accessible, Dave. You're talking about knowledge. If you start talking epistemology, I'm pulling you out. So we're going to do a little task. I don't have too much time, but we're going to do it. We just did a little bit. We have wolf spotting. Someone else, give me a passion that you have, a hobby, a passion. Yes, classical ballet. Very nice. Here's the question. We have a community member who has a passion for classical ballet. What can the library do to support, work with, take advantage of that passion? Ideas. ask music schools to come in and play music from ballets and services. Okay? So once again, we can connect to different parts of the community and different parts of it. What else? Offer courses, right? I saw ballet practice going in the video, right? So if you have a passion for it, is that something you could teach? Or you say, well, no, I have a passion for it. I don't, can't do it. Now, you may well. I don't mean to imply you don't look ballet-esque. But that's something else, right? And we've had situations, there was a library where a early literacy teacher came in, and she had a passion for literacy, and she had professional credentials, was very well known. And the library said, great, do story time, do literacy efforts. She goes, that's my day job. I have no interest in doing more of that. But what I will do for you is I will take some of the concepts and turn them into something. So they made packages, little packs that people did. And in the packages was a sheet about how to help your child learn reading, a basic board book, and that book had some relationship to a physical item. Because when you're teaching literacy, it's important to connect the abstract language to the concrete language. And so it would be a book about transportation, trucks. And it had a toy where you could sort of roll it away and it would roll back to you. And she put together all these different packets. And so the library became a place where she got to continue and investigate and utilize her passion, but it was in a different way. And she helped shape how we did that. All right, someone else, another passion. Bike racing, very good. So once again, I noticed that I believe Eric said that we have a winner of the Tour de France in that video. What ideas can we use for the biking and racing? Oh yeah, we can do fixing and maintenance. We can demonstrate that in the library. Bike stories. Once again, I want to be really clear. New librarianship or community librarianship doesn't mean books are bad. It just means they're connected. And so, right, we could have a collection around that. So using bike enthusiasts to help do delivery services to people who may be homebound or the elderly. That's my example. So community librarianship, new librarianship, or for me, the word is just librarianship, is taking that. That's what librarianship is. So your library may have a beautiful biking program. Yours, I don't know if we can capture wolves or we just release them from day to day. The building is closing at 5 o'clock. The wolves get released at 5:01. So the practical librarian part, the things you take away on how do we do this, the answer isn't so you do this service and you do this service and you do this service. That's the point, is not to do that. There's no blueprint that says, here's a community library, click, here's another one, click. The Storyhouse model, brilliant model, does it work in all places? Maybe, but the stories will be different. Is it a big, beautiful building, or is it lots of small buildings around? In Amsterdam, when they were planning their new great library in the financial sector, and they found out, like, nah, we want you to build the library in the least connected, least lowest income areas. Instead of just taking the blueprints and saying, well, let's see if it fits this way, they scrapped the blueprints and they started sending people into those neighborhoods in small areas in pop-up libraries just to talk to the people, just to be known by the people. And it's that knowledge that will then turn into the plan, then turn into the area. So if libraries are in the knowledge business, I don't think many people would argue that libraries are not in the knowledge business. Well, libraries are in the bookbinding business, or libraries are in the, I always love when people said, oh, libraries, they're in the book business. I said, oh no, we take books. We put plastic on the books. We put tags on the books. We send books home with people that eat and drink coffee on the books, right? When ebooks came out and the publishers said, we will give you to license an ebook, after 16 circulations, you have to buy more of the ebooks, which makes no sense. Where did that number come from? Because it's not like we wore out the bits. The number comes from most books, if you circulate it at around 16 times, you're going to need to replace them. They're going to have rips, tears, etc. Right? So we're not in the book business because we don't take care of them. Right? Yes, we do have special collections, and I understand that. But most of the time, we're in the sharing business. right? We distribute this. This became really clear during COVID. So the Toronto Public Library, or as you say in Canada, the Toronto Public Library, had an interesting moment. So COVID hits, all the libraries closed, including there was a network of food banks throughout Toronto. It turns out that the high percentage of the people working in these food banks were elderly. And this is not uncommon, at least in North America. Most of the people in volunteers and volunteering services are people who are older, who are in retirement, who have the time, or looking for connection. The problem, of course, meant that these food banks couldn't operate. They just didn't have enough people. So Vickery Bowles, the director, went to her staff and said, who's willing to help? Asked for volunteers, and got a lot of them. So they put these, because it's Canada, insulated packaging containers, right? The big, large containers. They put them in the parking lot of the libraries. And they began to deliver food to them, and the librarians were there, and they were helping. And it was horrible. It was a mess. It didn't work. Because what happened was, they put these things in, the librarians were in there, but the food delivery was based on how it was always done, which is a truck pulls up to a grocery store or a restaurant, food is given, and the truck starts driving from food pantry to food pantry, dropping off. And so by the fourth food pantry, they're down to like dehydrated potatoes, right? It's not good. So the librarian said, no, this is not going to work. We know how to do distribution. This is a large urban library. They have books. They're borrowed from branches all over the Toronto area. They have a central receiving, central distribution area. They have the logistics of doing that. And they said, we're going to do food pantries like we do libraries. And so all the food, all the trucks and food came to a central location, were distributed into packages because, you know, librarians in tote bags. A children's book was put in with that tote bag, and then those were distributed out to the containers. And it was a massive success. Now, a librarian, you're going, but librarians aren't food pantries. But how can people learn and know and understand, particularly when they're in the middle of a pandemic and crisis and worried about their life, if they're hungry, if they can't feed their children? And so librarians were able to bring their knowledge about how to learn and share and do things and create a conversation with their community about how can we do food distribution better? How can we move that forward? And that to me was not a nice thing that librarians did because they were bored, but central to a community that needed help and they were going to support it because once again, we save lives. Now, when I said that the first time, you laughed. And when I say that the 12th time, you're starting to go, maybe, right? So if we're in the knowledge business, we're in the conversation business. Our job here is not to show books. Our job is not to move things out of the building. Our job is not to provide electrical connections. Our job is to help people learn. We do that by having conversations. Those conversations can be between people, between groups, or within the individual. If, therefore, we are centered on knowledge, we are centered on the communities. We are centered not on the tools of learning, but the learning itself. Those tools are important. Don't get me wrong. A book was a fabulous piece of technology, is a fabulous piece of technology, but it is a piece of technology. I've heard so many people talk about how digital technology is intimidating and people don't want to learn it or it's over their head. Do you know what the gross percentage of the gross domestic product of the world is in teaching people how to use books? It's called primary education. We teach people to read. That's not something, you don't pick up a book and go, got it. You need to learn. I mean, when the book was invented, not too far from where we're standing. For hundreds of years, it didn't have a title page. It didn't have page numbers. It didn't have indexes. Those were inventions. They're great tools, but they're just tools. What we're trying to do is the learning and the knowledge. Our success as a librarian, as a library, which is an institution built by librarians for their communities, that our success is measured in the community's success, not our own. A great library can't be determined by the volumes it has in its building. A great library can't be determined by the number of staff. They can't be determined by the number of books circulated. They can only be determined by the improvement of the community. Do we have more people who can read? Do we have more people who are satisfied? Are more people connected? Do people explore their passions? Do people find meaning in their lives? Do we save lives? Our entire success of every part of a library operation is determined in community outreach. If you order books and shelve books, great. Did you order them because you talked with a community member and they needed them? Did you get that because you knew that trans people in your community were feeling isolated and had a greater chance of suicide than the rest of the population? Did you collect and organize that book by knowledge and desire and love of the community? Or did you just order some books? So this is vital. This is important. So this is a tweet that you will see every random. It's me. Whenever it shows up, there are two things that happen. The first time when everyone uses this quote is they always put it on top of an empty building full of books. The second is someone always says, oh, don't say there's such a thing as bad libraries. But I want to explain it to you quickly, and then I'm almost done. Bad libraries build collections. Oh, so if we have a lot of books, we're a bad library? No. What that means is if your focus is on the books and more of them, that's a bad function. In the United States, we have something called ARL, the Association of Research Libraries. Membership in the Association for Research Libraries, the top academic libraries, for a long time was based on the number of volumes that you held. So I'm not making this up. There would be libraries, academic libraries, that would show up at Yale and Harvard and these great prestigious universities the days that they weeded their old books, and they would take the dumpster of old books and they would put them on their shelves, which would increase their count, which would make them a prestigious ARL library. That's ridiculous, right? That's stupid. But that's the focus, right? What's your focus? Good libraries build services. Circulating collections, how we organize materials, those are services. But once again, why are we doing them? Great libraries build communities. That's why we're doing them. We're bringing people in, we're making them smarter, whether that's a university that's making engineers, whether that's a small rural neighborhood that is making lifelong stories and friendships, whether that we are making, building communities. That's what makes us great. So who is a librarian? And this is very important now that I'm in the Netherlands and we don't have a degree to tell us. There are three ways to be a librarian. Librarian by training, by education, whether you got a degree, whether you went to courses, whether you got professional development, you were taught to be a librarian. Degree by job. I was hired and I was told I was a librarian. Or librarian by spirit, or as Eric says, by heart. That is, those people who believe in knowledge, who believe in improving society through knowledge, that believe by connecting people to resources and information and each other, we can make a better day. So here's what I would like to do. At the end of my presentation, and then I will turn it back over, I would like to borrow a task from earlier. I would like for all the librarians by education to stand up. Good on you. Congratulations. Well done. Don't sit down. No, don't sit down. We have to make fun of you first. No. You guys keep me employed. Thank you so much. Stay up. Those of you who are working in a library, if you could please stand up. No, stay standing. Uh-huh. Those of you insane people who said, I have nothing to do on a Tuesday afternoon, I'm going to hear this crazy guy from America, but love libraries. Love their possibilities, stand up. Now repeat after me. Ready? Hand up. Actually, right hand. Right. I am a librarian. I am a librarian. I am a librarian. Amen. All right. Thank you very much.
Bedankt voor het luisteren naar deze aflevering van De Biep is Meer. Heb je zelf een mooi verhaal om te vertellen? Neem dan contact op via info@onderzoekmeteffect.nl. De Biep is Meer is een initiatief van Matt Gubbels. Hij gelooft in de kracht van podcasting en het verhaal van de bibliotheek. Graag tot een volgende keer.